that's what you're talking about. Like, somebody that's enlightened. You know, when they become enlightened, they're not, there's no more investigation.
They what?
There's no more investigation once they become enlightened.
It's not what there is, or it's not what there is, it's what there isn't. We all, everybody, does everybody know the word sankhara? You probably don't, right? Everybody's heard anicca vata sankhara. Everybody's heard avicca paccaya sankhara. So sankhara, we talk about the five khandhas, right? Five khandhas. Body, feeling, perceptions, sankhara, and consciousness. Sankhara is translated as thought formations. But in avicca paccaya sankhara, sankhara paccaya vijnanam, they're talking about karma. Sankhara means to do an act, a volitional act, a deliberate act by body, speech, and mind, produces karma, produces a result. How many kinds of result can it produce? What types? You all should know this. Some of you have been coming here for years. Don't make me ask. Okay, there you go. Wholesome, unwholesome, neutral. Asankata. Neutral. Visankata. No result. So sankharas, so you take the sankhara of paticca samuppada or dependent origination. Kama. Body, speech, and mind, kama. Wholesome, unwholesome, neutral. That is the production of karma they're talking about. Then you take sankhara in the khandhas. Is it the same or different? Naikanha. Sankhan, naikanha. Mernka paticca samubhad. No, not the same. So sankhara is in the kanha, in the five khandhas. Includes those things, but it also includes emotion, thought, all the mind processes that are not necessarily karma. And there's another sankhara. What is the other sankhara? With dhamma with a small d, huh? Dhamma.
Gamma.
Gamma is paticca samubhad. But so paticca samubhad, kanha, and one more sankhara. There's three different uses. Anicca vata sankhara. Your cars are a sankhara. Trees, rocks. Not just body and mind. Everything is a sankhara. All dhammas are sankharas. Which means they are, and what they're talking about here is all things are impermanent. So sankhara is translated as compounded, formed, put together, dependent upon conditions. Nothing in the universe is not compounded or formatted or dependent upon. They're all dependent upon conditions. That's the big sankhara, with dhamma with a small d. Dhamma with a small d means all things in the universe, without exception. So you have an arahant now who produces nothing but visankata or asankata. No, not wholesome or unwholesome, zero results in karma, no karma making. So can an arahant think? Sure. But does he produce karma? No. Can he prefer an orange over an apple? Yup. But does he produce karma? No. That's hard to understand. An arahant, basically, because we are so narrow in our view of the world, we only view body and mind, and the sankhara of everything else. We review everything else in relation to me. This is my bell. It's not really, but let's say it's my bell. Possession. So how much is possession? If I go out there and just take somebody's car, are they going to be upset? And say, okay, this is my car now. No, they're going to be upset. They go to my neighbors and cut down a tree or go into their house. Or we own, the mind possesses everything. And that craving and clinging, we possess. And when possession is on inanimate objects, which are sankharas, it makes them karmic, it helps produce karma. It is greed, hatred, and delusion. So we think of the world, jewelry, cars, land, trees, they're not neutral because the mind wants them, it owns them, and they become mine or theirs. Or so this is where little Dhamma Sankhara is affects and is stuck to our other sankharas. So sankhara in dependent origination is the narrow karmically making sankhara. Sankharas in the aggregates of body and mind is a much wider, much broader kind of sankhara. And sankhara in dependent origination is a maker, but sankhara in aggregates of body and mind is a receiver. It not only makes karma, it also gets the results. So you have kama vipaka. Sankhara in paticca-samubbad is not vipaka. It's karma. It's only making karma. But when we have it in us as a sankhara, thought formations, we call it thought formations. That is a receiver of karma as well as a maker. So it's, as I say, it's much more broad. And then little Dhamma sankharas is that's everything in the universe that is not mind, if we can look at it that way. But it is possessed by mind, so it causes pain and suffering and happiness and unhappiness, etc. When you view someone else's car, and then you go to a car lot that the cars are being sold, you don't look at the cars the same way. When you go to a land or a park that is not owned by an individual, you wander through it. It's much different than wandering through someone else's land that you know is possessed. Different feeling. It's like looking at a sunset. Nobody owns it. But if they did, we wouldn't look at the sunset the same way. Or we'd want to own it. So an arahant has this, doesn't make things out of that, doesn't possess. They don't have craving and clinging, they don't have the eye of possession. They look at a thing, this is it for what it is in and of itself. I don't want to own it, I don't not want to own it, it's just there in and of itself. So an arahant can be happy and enjoy everything because there's an orange and an apple, let's say I prefer the orange, I'll take the orange. But if there's no choice, then that's just as good. Or a fruit that I don't even like, that's fine too. But they have preferences. Because an arahant is not the five khandhas. An arahant is not body. An enlightened person is not body, they are not feelings, they're not perceptions, they're not thought formations, and they're not consciousness. They're not those things. And unfortunately, we as human beings, we can only look at everything in terms of five khandha. When we look, what was I in the past? We look at the five khandha. What will I be in the future? We look at the five khandha. When we get up every day and look in the mirror, we're looking at the five khandha. We can't think outside of that. It's a prison. We're locked in a prison. I am this five khanda, and we're not. So then we say, okay, an enlightened being is not the five khanda. How can we grasp that? They're not thought, they're not consciousness, feeling, perception, they're not body. We say, oh, I understand they're not body. Even when we talk about arahants, we think the question itself, right? It shows how we think about our how we cannot think about arahants, how we cannot think about enlightened beings. Even though the Buddha, a Brahma walks up to the Buddha. Sounds like the beginning of a joke. The Buddha's sitting under a tree, and the Brahma walks by, and he stops, and he thinks, he looks so glowing and so happy and so peaceful. I've never seen a holy man like that. So he stops, and he says, are you a god? Are you an angel? No, I'm not an angel. Well, are you a Gandhaba? It's another type of spirit being. He says, no. He says, are you a human being? He says, no. So he answers no to all those things. And of course, the Brahmin is confused. At the same time, he talks to Ananda in the same way. And Ananda's being upset because the Buddha is going to die in 3 months, and he announces it. And the Buddha looks at him and says, Ananda, do you think I'm body? Do you think the Buddha is body? He says, no, you're not body. Do you think I'm feelings? No. Do you think I'm perceptions? No, you're not. Do you think I'm sankharas, thought formations? No. Do you think I am consciousness? No. So he says, even here and now, I don't exist. How do you think of me? How are you thinking about me? But this is the Australian boomerang theory. This is an actual theory. I didn't make this up. Hope nobody looks it up on the internet. A boomerang does what it does because of its shape. If you throw a straight stick, it just goes. No matter how hard you throw a boomerang to make it go straight, it will not go straight. It goes round like this and comes back. The human mind is the same. As long as we are in possession of I, we're like the boomerang. No matter how you throw us, we stick to we're the five khandhas. It just goes round and round and round, and even though you get way out there, you kind of think, wow, and then you come back and clunk, me, I, mine, I am. Everything is from our viewpoint, and everything is the five khandhas viewpoint, and that viewpoint is not so hot. It's not so good. The world is in trouble with wars and everything else that's going on. People are not so nice, and because they simply don't understand those things. It's this possession. It's the I and me and mine. So an arahant doesn't have it. And he can't rummage around in the khandhas. You can't rummage around. Well, maybe consciousness is the arahant, is the enlightened being. Remember Sati the fisherman? Sati the fisherman says, it's consciousness that gets reborn. Just this consciousness that takes rebirth. It's this consciousness that comes back. And the Buddha called him in and said, you idiot, Lala Mukhang. You dribbling idiot, drooling idiot. When did you ever hear me teach like that? The consciousness is just this consciousness. What he's getting at is we tend to think of vijnana, consciousness, as special. When it's not. It is not me. It is not mine. It is not I. And it isn't this consciousness that is reborn. It's another. We like to look at ourselves as this thread. I am the same person through history after how many lifetimes? And you're not the same person. And when we extend, I will be reborn. Let's say I want to be reborn in a heavenly world. You are not going to be reborn in a heavenly world. Somebody from you is going to be born in a heavenly world. Just as, Do you remember your past lives? No. But when we try to think or imagine what was I in my past life, we think of me again. This just doesn't work like that. Even we think of yesterday, day before, when we were 10, when we were 3 years old. It's a built image in our imagination. When we remember things, we edit, we cherry pick, we change it. That's why when you get three witnesses to something, they'll all say something different. And then we believe what we edit. Or we can edit out things that we don't want to remember. We just edit them out of our minds. So the sankharas are making us all the time. It's a polishing up, a building up, a refurbishing, a developing of me, of this personality. Someone called it a heap of personality or a pact of personality. And it's there. It's not an illusion. We do it. And in the real world, there's ownership. It's not that Buddhism says, you know, get rid of all your possessions and houses and etc. What he's saying is that the Buddha's saying, if you want to suffer, then you crave and cling to those things and you'll suffer. So how do we think? How can we think like an enlightened person thinks? You can't. I think sometimes maybe people can get glimpses. So if you get a glimpse, let's say you're looking at a sunset or a sunrise or the Grand Canyon, and you're nice and calm and you don't own that thing. You don't own the Grand Canyon or the sun rising or the sun setting or beautiful mountains. You just sit there without any craving and clinging, without ownership. What's the feeling? That's why people go to those places. To relieve themselves of the burden of ownership. Away from house, away from family, away from home, even walk away from the car. So that nothing that you own is in sight. You want your boss sitting next to you. That would ruin it. You don't want to have a stack of envelopes, you know, like bills and stuff. That's not going to help. You leave all that and you sit and you just, there's nothing. There's just, I'm enjoying this in and of itself. So if an arahant has that all the time, whatever they look at is like a sunset or a sunrise or the Grand Canyon. Whether it's roadkill, or it is a beautiful tree. They always have that feeling.
So you can appreciate it, but that's as far as it goes.
An arahant, you mean?
Yes.
I don't know if I'd use the word appreciation. Because appreciation is dependent.
Yeah.
Aha, still haven't got it. Here we go again, another 10 minutes. It is asankata, visankata. It is unconditioned, uncompounded, unconnected to what anything we can think about it. So, no, they wouldn't appreciate it. They would... Well, that doesn't sound right either. Yeah. Because they're always in that state of they're always happy. They've let go of things that make them unhappy. There's no craving and clinging. We can't imagine that either.
But if you kept coming back every day to that sunset, then you would be craving for it.
We would. Well, it depends on why would someone go back every day to the sunset? The Buddha talked about a pleasant dwelling here and now. And he's talking about why we are in possession of body and mind. And he's talking about mostly about meditation states. But enlightened beings, many of them, of course, they wouldn't be in the city. running around doing things. They would be somewhere very quiet and just they're waiting for this body and mind to fall apart and go away because they're stuck there. And not stuck there. I mean, since it won't make any difference to them.
Does the arahant, is that how you say it? Does it have any responsibility to mankind?
What an arahant, one of the possessions of them is that they're compassionate. So what goes with compassion? But it's not compassion like I'll donate some money for such a cause. It's compassion in that I want to free other people. I want to free people from craving and clinging. So, as you recall, when the Buddha first became enlightened, he says, I'm not going to teach. People are just too dumb. Those are my words. People won't understand. They won't understand and nothing will come of it. So I don't think I'll teach. And then 7 weeks, he sat under the tree for 7 weeks, just sitting there. And then he reviewed and he said, there are some people with little dust in their eyes. Some people. And for those people, I'll go out and teach. So he's not evangelical, because figure from a Buddhist point of view, most of the world is just not going to get it. Ever. So for those people who do get it, or who want to be, they want their minds liberated, they want to go beyond, they have a love of wisdom, a love of investigation, healthy skepticism, questioning. Those people will listen. But doesn't mean that everybody who listens... I mean, you give a talk, let's say 200 people. If I give a talk to 200 people, I expect 2 or 3 people that it will change something in them. The rest, no. Yawning, scratching... Talking, texting, squandered, totally squandered. Nothing got in at all. So, if we think like a Westerner, it's evangelical. It's got to convert the whole world at their, you know, either or convert. This is how the history used to be. And now it's knock on the door, here's my pamphlet, I'll give you a call, emails, etc. I have a hard time understanding this, but when I was 12, I became a Buddhist. There were no Buddhists. I couldn't meet a single Buddhist. 1965, the first temple opened up, Washington, D.C. I took a job in the summer, earned my money, bought a ticket, flew down, talked to the monk. Saved my money, secretly got a passport, saved my money for a ticket to Asia to go be a monk. I had nobody to talk to. I had to go halfway across the world and spend 2 years earning money and getting to the age of 18 so I could get a passport. Scrambling all over, you know, and stupid books out then. I mean, there was very few books. And now it's everywhere and people don't want it. It's laid at their feet. They can push a button and get them read something of the original Buddha's message. There's monks in every single state. Temples all over. Scholars and everything. It's got to be easier than that. So, the duty of an enlightened being. They have compassion. If some enlightened beings, and even the Pajeka Buddha, they call it Pajeka Buddha. It means private Buddha. A person who's a Buddha but never teaches. They don't have to teach. Just goes up in a cave or in the woods somewhere and lives the rest of his life and dies there. Never teaches. Some because the khandhas, body and mind, don't have the ability to teach. You think everybody can teach? No. Even if you're a surgeon, expert, some of them can't teach. They just can't teach. So it depends on your past karma. What were you born with? What abilities do you have? Can you teach? Can you get to people? Will they listen to you? Do you explain it in the correct way? You know, knowing your audience and their age and their etc. So some people can't teach. They would make a mess of it. It's better they don't teach. And some people, they'll teach if you go to them and ask for help. They'll teach you. And then there's some teachers that nowadays, of course, people that write books and teach through books, but really don't give talks. And then everybody in between. So in Arahant, you can't say, will they teach or will they not teach? It depends on the instruments they have to be able to do that. And not all Arahants are scholars. An enlightened being may be enlightened by an insight that can't be taught. So there's a story of the monk that's having his head shaved, and as the hair is falling, he becomes enlightened. All right, everybody shave your heads and you'll become enlightened. That's not going to work, is it? We'll just see our hair falling off and go, oh my God, why am I doing this? Now I look awful. It would backfire. So since everybody is as different as a fingerprint, we can't answer that. Is it the duty? No. Arahants don't have any duties at all. We have duties. Is it a burden? Is another way, you know. No, they wouldn't. They don't take on burdens because nothing is a burden. They don't take on duties because they don't have duties. But where their mind is, where their development is, as far as their abilities, then they'll generally go that way. So you have great teachers. You have Ajahn Sao, who is supposedly an enlightened monk. He didn't teach anybody. Ever. And then you have at the opposite end, you have Ajahn Mun, who was a great teacher. Could give talks for hours and hours and hours. Lumpu Dun, who I think probably was an Arahant, was an enlightened being. Wonderful talks. And his fellow monk, Lumpu Sam, who I stayed with for 1 year, said three things in a year. And they weren't directed at us. Never taught, ever. Sat in the underneath his hut, didn't even go upstairs, on a plastic mat on the cement floor. He lived there till he died. Perfectly happy. Lumpu Wan, though, the picture that I have in my room, Lumpu Wan. Same. Perfectly happy in a bamboo hut all his life. Died at 80 some years old. Almost 90. Died of cancer. No treatment, no medicines. Get away from me. I remember seeing a picture when he died. He's like curled up with his little beanie on. Just died like sleeping like that. Ajahn Mahabua. Very, very famous in Thailand. Lots of talks, CDs, videos, internet, tons of talks. Okay, which one's better? They're both enlightened. Which is a better enlightened? It's the same. One had the tools from karma, this collection of vasana, what do you call that? Inheritance of good things that they brought with them from lives along the way. And some didn't have that. So, if you've got a Volkswagen Beetle, you're not going to climb the Andes, you know. You get a Jeep. So it's that, what are we stuck with? This is what we're stuck with. doesn't have anything to do with IQ. It's not IQ. But if someone becomes enlightened and their IQ is very high, they might be a good teacher. But if someone whose IQ is not very high, they might just choose to pay no attention to anybody. Again, what is available to that person. They're equally enlightened, but not equally gifted in the sense of the world. Any other questions along that line? Yeah. Everybody's interested in StreamWinner. That's the I'd like to do a whole talk on that. We only have 10 minutes, so let's say next Saturday. Does it?
If 15 minutes behind the one clock.
This is the one we have to go by. I want to stick to this sankharas or kanda theme. Do you have any questions? Are you getting a lot of this?
Yes.
Okay. Sometimes we're using, basically we're using three languages back and forth, so... Pali. Most people know Pali. I mean, know the terms we're talking about. The people have been coming here. They're technical terms. And when you say it in English, it's not quite right. That's the problem. So when you say the word sankhara, those three kinds of sankhara should come up to mind. So you have this holistic view of what is these volitional thought formations. What are these intentions? In other words, it's karma we're talking about. But it is also karma maker and the results of karma. And things that fill our life, that belong to us. Nothing is it, and as we looked at the other things, we looked at feelings, we looked at perceptions. They're not that... The English doesn't quite get it. You have to look at those things and all these different... How they work. How they all interact. But sankharas in the khandhas, you can basically think... It's everything but body, feeling, and perception. Easy. Everything but... So it's... Sankharas are not... And consciousness. Sankharas are not body. Of course they are. But I mean mental in the aggregates. They are not... body is separate. Feeling is separate. Perception is separate. Consciousness is separate. And the sankharas take everything else up. So when people ask me, is emotion feeling? This seems to be confusing. No. Feeling is sensation. Emotion belongs to the sankharas, as does dreaming, imagination, sleeping, all the emotions we feel, all the craving, clinging, karma, that's all thought formations. That is not body. That is not feeling. So how are they connected? We went over feelings and perceptions, so we should all know how they're connected. I love this formulas in Buddhism. It's like avijja paccaya sankhara sankhara paccaya vijnana. There's a formula to this. I. Okay. I, object, consciousness, contact, beep, feeling, perceiving. OK? Come on, guys. Or you're just shy. You're shy. So how does that connect? You see, they're all connected, right? You can't take them apart separate. Then it's not. It's like a car, okay? You take the wheel off. Okay, now I got my car. I'll just take the steering wheel. Now I have my car. You need all those parts together and you say, car. A wheel is not a car, it's a wheel. The engine is not a car, it's an engine. The seats inside, the body of the car, though none of those are car. We just say, oh, that's the body of a car, that's the engine, that's the wheel. Woo! This me is not a me unless you put all those things together and they work. Otherwise you take them apart, and this is why the Buddha says this is how you learn about it. Take body away from the other things. Is it a person? No. To take any one part out, it ceases to be a human being. It ceases to function. But you put them all together and say, ah, here, this is a person. But they're all made of parts that are all impermanent and not me. Is me body? If there's no mind in there, is that me? No. They pull the plug on you. There's nobody at it. It's a vegetable. That's what they call it. It's not me anymore. If you're not conscious, is there a me there? There's no feeling, or you can't perceive, or you don't have thought formations. Nobody there. So they have to work, they work together. Neither more nor less. You can't add to it, you can't subtract to it. It's perfect. It's perfect that it is. You can't add. What do you add to body? Horns, feathers. A body is body. Can't add, subtract. And then mind, those that feeling, perception, thought formations, and consciousness covers. It's wonderful. Where is consciousness? You know, does it reside kind of behind the eyes, or is it kind of back behind the ear? If you look, you can take the mind apart. Remember, mind is body. I mean, the gray matter that belongs to body. But mind, the thinking part of mind, the thought processes depend on body. That's why you can't take body away and still have a person. So you have the consciousnesses, you have the six feelings, the six contacts, the six feelings, the six perceptions, the six consciousnesses. Eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind. You can take anyone you want, nose, eye, ear, but it doesn't matter. They're not the same. They're separate. Consciousness, where is he? They're not the same, they're separate. Scientists know that. Sight is back here, smell and hearing are on the side. There's a place in the brain for those things. You can pinpoint, you can take them out. You know, not delicately, not using an ice cream scoop or anything, but sort of, you can surgically remove your vision, your hearing, your smell, your taste, feeling. They have a place in it. Where's consciousness? Because remember, consciousness is that overall. You have I, you have object, you have conscious. You're conscious of it, that's called contact. And there's a conscious for nose, not the same as I. They don't communicate that well. Consciousness is a thing that puts them all together, ties them together, and makes sense out of our senses. It interprets, and it pulls out from perceiving, using feeling, and then it formulates, it compounds, it thinks. So if you picture a brain in the air here, nice big brain, maybe kind of see-through would be pretty, blue, kind of blue. Not a drippy gray brain. And then you picture the, you know, sight is back here. You can kind of, people who studied biology and And then pour alcohol on it and light it on fire. No, this is not some kind of delicacy in Thailand.